Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Let Asha, your Legal Shield associate, connect you to a legal insurance plan that's right for you. Quality attorneys at established law firms for about $20 a month.
Awesome!
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of The Overwhelmed Brain. This is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about in the show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment and is intended to be for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult your physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. What you'll find here is an increase in your emotional intelligence, a strengthening of your self-worth and self-esteem, the motivation to be your authentic self, and the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, the first thing I want to talk about is something that I put out in the newsletter. If you're on my newsletter, theoverwhelmedbrain.com, then you've already got a little taste of what I'm going to talk about right now, which is someone tried to con me. Someone tried to pull the wool over my eyes. And in the newsletter, I said, I don't want to give away the whole thing. So you'll have to tune in. So this is that part. This is the part I want you to tune into. My girlfriend and I went to a music store to pick up a microphone for me. And this microphone is, I could use it for podcasting, but it is for any time we do music together. If you've listened for a while, you probably heard that I go on stage every now and then. She's more of the performer, and I just kind of help out. I add harmonica. I might do a little bit of singing, even though I'm not that good at it, and help her create a show that is enjoyable and help her with her songs. And she really appreciates my contribution to her music performances. So I'm happy to do that. And it's fun. And it actually challenges me in the sense of, doing more musically, with the harmonica and guitar and things like that. But, I didn't have a real microphone, so her and I, a few days ago, went to a music store, like I was saying. And there's a particular sales clerk that always, when he's there, helps us out. Andy's always very kind to us, always very friendly, and we even saw him out and about once, and we talked for quite a while, and he shared with us some sad news in his life. So I really thought that there was some level of friendship there. I know, not like a major connection, but just, you know, kindness and connection and rapport and just a friendliness that's more than an acquaintance. So he was there this time, and as soon as we walked in, he saw us from across the store, and he said, "Hey, how you guys doing?" And he came over and he gave us a hug, and that was like the first time. I was like, "Wow, we've been upgraded to hug status." So, all right, great. So this is nice to see this guy, and I tell him what we're looking for, and he brings us over to another department, and he takes out a microphone. And I asked, you know, how much is it? And he starts talking and he goes, "Okay, well, this microphone, it's this model and it's this price with 1 year warranty and it's going to be about," and he didn't finish the sentence. But while he was talking, this warning flag came up in my system, in my body. And the warning flag was, he's talking really fast. But that wasn't really the warning part. The warning part was when he said something about the 1 year warranty. And I was like, does he mean that it comes with a 1 year warranty or that he wants to add this 1 year warranty? Wasn't sure. But at that moment, I had this feeling. And in my newsletter, I said, you know, I felt it in my stomach. So normally I would excuse the feeling. Like, he's treating us right. He's not going to throw in any extra charges or anything. It probably comes with a 1 year warranty, and that's what he meant. So he brings me over to the register. My girlfriend goes and looks at some cables in another area of the store, and he starts to ring me up. And I notice the price of the microphone, and then I notice the price of the 1 year warranty. And I was like, "Why did you add that? I didn't ask for that." And he goes, "What do you mean?" And I was like, "You added the 1 year warranty without even asking me if I wanted it." And suddenly he was like, he just couldn't really come up with the words to get out of this tricky situation I put him in, because I was calling him out. I'm calling him out because at that store, every other salesperson that we worked with always, and they're told to do this, I know they are, always asks you if you want to add the protection plan, the warranty, or whatever, because there's an extra cost to it. But this guy didn't offer it. He just added it. And then he just gave me the total. And at that moment, my feeling was justified. In that very moment, the feeling I had in my stomach when he first mentioned it, because when he first mentioned it, I'm thinking, is he going to try to add that to my total? And I got that feeling, you know, that intuition or my gut instinct, whatever you want to call it. And when I saw it appear on the screen and he didn't even mention it, I called him out. And I said, "Why did you add the warranty? I didn't ask for that. That's not very nice. In fact, that's very unethical." I'm serious. I said all of this. And I said, "You know, this doesn't make me feel like we're friends. In fact, this makes me feel like you're trying to put one over on me. This makes me feel like you're trying to deceive me. And it's all about money. And the fact that you didn't tell me that you were doing this doesn't make me want to come back as a repeat customer." And you know what? I said this fairly eloquently now, but then when I was in that state, when I caught him red-handed, this came out of me very fluently, very easily. Very efficiently. It was like I knew what was happening. I knew how I felt, and I knew I didn't like it. And I was going to call him out on everything, even if it made me uncomfortable. Because that's what it did. When I was saying all of this stuff, it made me uncomfortable because I knew that he was going to have a response, a reaction, something to it that I would then have to face next. I mean, if that doesn't make sense to you, just imagine my people-pleasing past where I was always very careful about how I talked to people to make sure that they were always happy. And then turning into someone who stands there honoring himself, is in line with his integrity, and wants to be treated with respect and not deceived, not conned, and says this stuff to someone. It's night and day, and that's why it made me a little nervous saying this, because that really hasn't been my modus operandi or MO. That has not been me. I have not been the kind of person to express exactly what I wanted to express. I always found a way to sugarcoat it a little bit, to approach it carefully, to maybe even give the benefit of the doubt. That's always been my typical response, because as a former people pleaser, I wanted to create an either neutral situation while honoring myself, or a very subtle commentary on what I believed was happening. But I chose not to be subtle. I chose to react on the feeling that I justified in that moment. So like I said, he started backpedaling, trying to come up with an excuse, and it was very clear that he had done this before, but was not caught in the way I did, in the way I caught him. Because when I mentioned this to my girlfriend later, and she's like, "What? You said what?" And she goes, I wouldn't have said that. And I was like, "What would you have said?" And I already knew what she was going to say. She said, "Well, I would have said, no, I don't want that warranty. Take that off." And I was like, "Exactly." I said, "That's what most people would have said. Most people would have said, oh, you made a mistake. You put the warranty on there." But I had a feeling it was going to happen, because when he was talking and he said 1 year warranty, when every other salesman in the store, including himself, has asked, "Do you want the warranty?" And you know what? 99 out of 100 times, I don't want the warranty. So even if it was a mistake, like, "Oh, you guys always get the warranty, I'm just going to throw it on there," it's still something they teach you to ask as a separate thing. So I knew I was justified in what I was saying, and I was able to further justify it by his response, by him not just going, "Oh my God, you're right. I totally made a mistake here. I'm so sorry about that." He didn't act like that at all. He acted like a kid getting caught with his hand in the cookie jar. I walked into the kitchen and saw the kid with his hand in the cookie jar, and I said, "What are you doing?" There's nothing he can say. He's like, "Mom said I could have," you could, you could hear the hesitation in his voice in that very same way. I totally caught him, and he knew it. And then he acted a little cold to me after that, which really further defined the relationship that he wanted with us. Now, my feeling wasn't based on that single transaction of communication in that moment. My feeling was based on the number of times we visited that store and he helped us. There is one more thing that happened in that moment that I'll tell you in a second, but I want to tell you why I'm telling you this. Yes, there's a reason behind all of this. And the reason I'm telling you this is because there's a feeling that you get that when somebody says something that doesn't sound right, that sounds a little suspicious, like, "What does he mean by that?" Or what did she say she was going to do? You know, there's that feeling that comes in. I want you to hold on to that feeling until you justify it. Meaning, and this is kind of the lesson here for me and hopefully for you too, meaning every time we were in that store in the past, I sort of got that feeling. I sort of felt like we were being led down a deceptive path, but he was so friendly and so nice and so good at making us feel comfortable with his deceptions that I dismissed it. So I got the feeling many other times before with him, but he was so good at turning things around, making us trust him, making us feel like he was leading us down a path that benefited us, that I dismissed the feeling. So when I got the feeling that I should have trusted, I dismissed it because he wouldn't do that to us. My doubt came in. And I'm here to say that when you get a feeling like that, don't dismiss it. Hold on to it until you find justification for it, until you find evidence to back it up, because there's something there. That doesn't mean everyone in the world that you get this feeling from is trying to deceive you or manipulate you. There's all kinds of reasons you might get this feeling. But I don't want you to dismiss it. I want you to use it as a guide, like, huh, that feels a little weird. Is he going to throw that extra charge on my bill? I mean, I've had this happen in restaurants where I'll say, hey, can I have some honey mustard to dip my French fries in? I know I'm a little weird. I dip my French fries in honey mustard. And they go, absolutely. And they might say something else, but I get a feeling like, I bet they're going to charge me for that. I don't know what it is. It's not psychic. It might be in something they said earlier or however they worded it. But I'll look at my bill and it'll be like a 50-cent charge for honey mustard and a 50-cent charge for barbecue sauce. Not that it's expensive and I won't pay it, but it was just never said. It was like, I'm going to throw this in there and not tell you that I'm going to charge you for it. I had that happen in another restaurant. I know I'm going all over the place. Another restaurant charged me for the refills for my tea. And I looked at my bill and I'm like, what is this? Two refills at whatever it was, $2.50 each or something like that. And I asked her about it. I'm like, what are these? I thought refills are free. She goes, no, sorry. We charge for refills here. I don't remember if I got a feeling back then, but why wouldn't they be honest with me about that? And a lot of the times it's because, well, if I'm honest with you about it, you won't get any refills. You won't buy it. So I'm just going to ask for forgiveness later and just add it to your bill, hoping that you don't complain about it. So that really kind of irks me. So I've had this in my system where people just try to add more money. I mean, like the cable company or cellular phone companies. How many microcharges am I going to see on my bill before I finally call up and say, what are all these charges? What are these service fees? So on and on and on. I could go off on a lot of stuff there. But let me bring it back to when we kept going to the music store and I kept getting that feeling. When I look back at why I had those feelings now, I can start connecting all the dots. One of those dots was my girlfriend went in there once. I was with her, I think, in another part of the store, and she was looking at some cables that time too, trying to get some the right types of cables for her keyboard and for her microphone and things like that. And this same sales clerk gave her quite a few sets of cables, and they were all very expensive. And he said, no, these are the ones that you want. Absolutely. And she's like, okay, she trusts him and we've been working with him for a while. Well, we got home and then she realized, oh, I'm missing one cable. I need to go back and get that next cable. So I don't know if we went back the next day or the day after, but we finally went back and he wasn't working that day. And another guy was working and he said, here's the cable you need. And he showed her like a cable that was half price, something that was a lot less expensive. And she goes, well, so-and-so told me I need these cables. And he said, these are the ones that'll work because of this, this, and this. Who knows, gold plating, this and this. And he goes, no, you don't need that at all. Those are very expensive. You don't have any use for that unless you're running it over 100 feet. And he was just very honest about what he was saying. And she goes, so I don't need all of these things that I bought the other day? And he goes, well, they'll work, but those are our most expensive cables. And so, ding, there's another mark. There's another justification mark for that feeling that she got and I got at the same time. But we dismissed it. Maybe it was just a fluke. Maybe this, maybe that. But every time we went in, one of us got this feeling like he was guiding us down a road that didn't feel very honest. And again, putting together the dots, we realized that he almost always showed us the most expensive thing. It's like going to a restaurant, another restaurant analogy, and you say, what's good on the menu? And the waiter or waitress tells you the most expensive meal on the menu. It's never, oh, the curly fries are good. The $6 appetizer is good. It's always the most expensive. Now, it may be the best on the menu, and that's why it's expensive and things like that. But it's just funny when they only say that particular meal, or they'll name all three of the most expensive meals on the menu. And it just feels like, are you being honest with us? But again, it's hard to tell. Just because it's expensive, does that mean it's the best? Does it mean it's their favorite? Is that what they order all the time? Or is that like a special thing? So who knows? I can go back and forth with that. It doesn't really matter. But what matters is that when you can connect the dots and you get the same feeling over and over again, don't dismiss it. Hold on to it. And this is sort of my last suggestion. This is all just my opinion. And call the person out. You don't have to do this. Like I had someone write to me and say, you know what? It's not easy just to call it out. Sometimes you could get fired from work. Sometimes you might create strife in your family or your coworkers if you just call people out every time you're detecting some sort of deception or lie. And I agree. I absolutely agree. And one of the things that this person who wrote to me said was that, you know, it can get pretty lonely when you start calling people out for their deceptive ways or their manipulation or their dishonesty. And I wrote back and I said, you're absolutely right. In fact, I will admit that I have chosen the lonelier road of integrity with myself instead of just giving in to what people are trying to manipulate from me or to me or whatever. I have chosen a lonelier road of calling people out when they're trying to do something that personally affects me. Because here's this guy trying to add an extra charge. It wasn't phenomenal, but it was more money. And I know that the warranties are how the employees in the store make more money. So it kind of irks me when it's just thrown on there without even asking me. So I called him out. And I realized that I have probably now lost whatever this relationship was with this guy. Was it a friendship? Was it just based on, hey, I'm a salesperson and you're my customer and I'm going to be friendly to you so you'll buy from me, which is fine. But as soon as you deceive me, it's no longer fine. And I've gotten to a point in life where I am now prioritizing integrity over connections that are toxic to me. And I can do this because I feel enough in alignment with myself that I am okay losing friendships that aren't really friendships, losing love that isn't really love. Because friendship and love, in my dictionary, do not contain lies and deceit or manipulation. I'm okay losing a job. I'm okay losing a lover, a spouse, if what we have is based on you trying to manipulate me, you lying to me. Now, before you write to me and say, well, it could have just been a mistake. You know, I do that at my job and we're supposed to do this. Like I said, the dots are connected. And there was a number of times that we visited him and a number of different situations where I felt that same feeling. My whole point with this segment is for you to hold on to that feeling until it's justified, for you to get the evidence you need, whether it's for that feeling or against that feeling, so that you can, I don't know, close the loop on that feeling. You've heard me talk about closing the loop. It's like unfinished business. When you have that feeling, that's unfinished business. If you repress that feeling and go, ah, must be nothing, and that feeling is still in there, but you've pushed it down, now you have some unfinished business, an open loop that sticks with you. And it can come out in other ways if it comes out at all. It can come out in a lashing out at your coworkers or kids or whatever. Or it may never come out and start to fester inside of you. And that is unhealthy. What I did was close the loop right away. I had this feeling. I justified it. I spoke up about it. I expressed myself. I was nervous. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to say these things. But if I was going to be in alignment with my own integrity, I had to. Does this mean I've severed any type of relationship with this person? Yes, I think I did. And I'm okay with that. What if I see him on the street? I'll still say, hey, how's it going? I'll still respect him. Doesn't mean I automatically hate him. Just means that now I know at what level he operates in the type of relationship we had. Great. So now I can categorize him at that level. And now, again, I am taking the lonelier road of integrity and keeping my dignity. So I hope this helps you if you're in any type of situation out there where you feel like you're getting conned or manipulated, and maybe you wanted a path out of that feeling or what have you. It's my opinion. It's what I do. Do I recommend you do it? I think it's not our job to try to change other people and tell them how to act in the world. But when you feel personally affected, when someone is doing something directly to you, that's when it's time to make the choice. I mean, you have a choice. I can stand up and say something. I can leave. I can ignore it. But what decision will be the most empowering for you so that you don't have to hang on to any negativity about it? Because there are people that I've just walked away from and never came back to them again, categorizing them so that I don't deal with them anymore. It probably means they continue doing what they're doing, which, you know, isn't good for the rest of the world. So maybe what I did by calling this guy out, maybe it'll change his mind. Maybe he won't do this behavior again. Maybe he'll be more candid with people. Maybe he'll try not to be so deceptive with people and not stick extra charges on their bill, or not. And maybe if he's listening right now, he'll find that honesty is the best policy. Who knows? Check in with yourself. Follow those feelings. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I want to tell you about getoutofthemess.com. If you've ever needed legal advice or legal help or weren't sure where to turn, it's nice to have a phone number to call. Because what happens? You get into trouble or someone threatens you with a lawsuit or does something that you know is wrong. Who do you have to turn to? I want you to consider what Asha calls legal insurance. Asha is a representative for Legal Shield. And she can be reached at 678-355-8777. And she'll connect you with a legal insurance plan that gives you the resources that you need when you feel like you're backed into a corner, when you feel like you have no one else to turn to and you just need some legal advice. And it's not just advice, though, because I've used them to look over my contracts. She's used them to handle all kinds of things, send letters out for her. I remember one time she had this timeshare that her ex now owns, if you can even call it ownership. He's supposed to be paying for it, and they have some debt collector calling, and she gets this call out of the blue for this timeshare that she has nothing to do with. And she said, "Stop calling me." And she had an attorney through the Legal Shield service send them a letter so they would stop calling her, and they did. But that was the only way she could get them to stop. Because debt collectors really don't listen to the consumer all that well. They wait for someone in more authority, like someone legal, because then they know you're serious. I want people to know you're serious. I want you to have that kind of resource at your fingertips. Go to getoutofthemess.com and check out what Asha can connect you with. If you're in the US or Canada, this is the perfect service for you, not only for things that are going on in your life now, but for what can happen in the future. Like her son now has his license, and if he gets a speeding ticket, this service will definitely help her. Call Asha at 678-355-8777 or visit getoutofthemess.com and find out if this legal insurance plan is right for you. Welcome back. Let's get right into it. This is an email from Chase. He said, "Use my real name." So, Chase, if you're listening, this is for you. I'm using your real name. He says, "I stumbled across your podcast at what feels like the right time in my life. It's been great listening, and I feel that you have helped me a great deal. Thank you for that." You are welcome, Chase. Thank you. "I have been divorced from my high school sweetheart for about 8 months now. We sought counseling before and then separated and later divorced. We have 2 children together. We are amicable and try to do the best for ourselves and our kids. I believe that I am very similar to you, and my situation seems very closely related to your story of your first wife and your divorce. I was emotionally abusive toward my wife throughout our relationship because I was narcissistic. Now, I did not know this at all and only started down this self-reflective journey when we started counseling. Anyway, it's taken me a long time to be completely vulnerable and honest with myself and take responsibility for my emotional abuse in the relationship and how that pushed my wife away for years. I would always manipulate the situation so that I would get what I wanted, and then she would see that my option was the best option. I didn't know real love. I have done a lot of work on myself to get where I am now. I wanted to ask you a question. My ex-wife and I are close, and we always will be. I want to be back with her because I feel that neither of us showed up as our true selves in the relationship. We didn't know who we really were. We started at the high school dance and stayed together until it all came crashing down 10 years into our marriage. I want to show her who I am now. And also, I am way more attracted to the new her as well, when she came to own her self-identity. She states that she hopes that we find our way back to each other in the future. I agree. However, we both know it can't happen too soon because we do not know ourselves well enough to make it work. It would last maybe a year tops before it crumbles again. We both want it to work if we did give it a second chance. I fear that we may get there within ourselves, but I'm afraid we won't find our way back to each other. I understand that we'll both be better off if that's what happens because it wasn't meant to be. But I want it to happen. I want us to experience the new people that we are. Anyway, I wanted to ask why you and your wife were not able to get back together after you did the work you needed to do from being emotionally abusive. Was it just too late? Do you think it could be too late for my ex-wife, even though she verbalizes that she would like to try again in the future, but we need to heal first? I'm not sure if this is an email that you're going to read on the air or not, but if you do, you can use my real name. Thank you for your work. I know you have helped me and many more. Chase. All right, Chase, thank you so much. Yes, I read your email on the air. And this is the time I'm going to answer your email on the air, or at least do my best to answer it. So let's do a little breakdown of your message. One, you were with your high school sweetheart. Now, with high school sweethearts, that can be wonderful, and it can be a fantastic relationship that can last for years and years and years, or it can come crashing down like it did with you. And more often than not, I've seen high school sweetheart type of relationships crash. That's just my experience. I don't know the statistics in the entire world, but that's what I've seen. And there are several reasons for that. When we're in high school, we are very young minds. We're experiencing a lot of things for the first time, and everything is new and exciting, and we want it to stay that way. So when we're with someone and it's new and exciting, we want to be with that person and keep that new and excitingness of the relationship forever. But then, you know, you get out of high school, you either get a job or go to college, and then you get out of college and you get a job and you live together, and then the real world settles in and you realize, wow, all those freedoms I had in high school, I don't have anymore. And everything that I thought was fun and new and exciting is different now that I'm out. And not only that, I mean, the brain is still developing in high school. I think the brain develops until at least the essential functions. I think the brain continues to develop the essential functions like into your early 20s, I think I just heard from neuroscientists. So that also highlights the idea that when you get into a relationship in high school, that it's hit or miss if it continues, because your brain could develop different values and beliefs and attractions and understandings and perceptions of the world that may not last into the adult life that you lead from that point on. So it's hit or miss. I'm not saying that if you're with your high school sweetheart, it's going to crash, because if you've gotten past a certain point and you get along great, great. You don't have to worry about it. I mean, at least you survive that transition from the young mind to the more, dare I say, mature mind. And you are learning about more adult-oriented situations and the challenges that adults have to face. So there's that part. So I just wanted to kind of lay that as the foundation, that there's a possibility that because you met at such a young age and you stayed together, that that transition can sometimes have a profound effect on your marriage, your togetherness. Now, another thing that you said is that you were emotionally abusive towards your wife because you were narcissistic. Now, I don't know if you really were narcissistic. You could probably say that you did narcissistic type of behavior from what I understand about narcissism, if you were narcissistic, you wouldn't say you were narcissistic. Or at least if you had the personality disorder. So if you had the personality disorder, you probably, maybe, wouldn't have gotten as far as you did with your self-reflection and self-healing. So I just want to kind of paint that picture for you as well, that maybe you did things that were very selfish, very self-serving, but it didn't necessarily mean you are narcissistic. I'm not trying to diagnose you. I mean, if you had a difference of opinion on that, that's fine. Either way is fine. It doesn't really affect how I am going to respond to this. But I just wanted to present that to you, that it's possible you did some of the characteristics of narcissism, but maybe you weren't really narcissistic. Just an opinion. Anyway, you go on to say that your ex-wife and you are close, and you always will be. So now here is where I kind of step in and ask some of the harder questions. Because if you are close with someone, does that closeness involve a healthy love for that person? Just an episode or two ago, I talked about love versus in love. Because when you love, you, in my opinion, support the other person's happiness, which means, and here's the tough question, if she dates someone, how will you feel about it? If you see her happy with someone else, are you going to support her happiness with that person? That might be a tough question, because from what I'm getting in your letter, you want to be with her, which introduces another variable in this formula. Because if you want to be with her, and you're okay if she dates other people, is intimate with other people, then I would say that is a healthy, maybe loving, nurturing friendship. You know you have a history together, but you also support her happiness and want her to be with people that make her happy, whether it's you or someone else. If you want to be with her and you're bothered by her being with other people, now we're getting into the realm of, I want what I want, and that's all that I want. It's sort of like you said in later in your letter, but I want it to happen. I want us to experience the new people that we are, which I get. I completely understand. But does that affect how you treat her and how you support her? Because this is where you will define your relationship with her. If you can support her and be happy, genuinely happy for her when she's happy, even if she's with someone else, that is a healthy, nurturing, supportive, loving relationship that you can have with a good friend or even an ex-wife that you now get along with well, even if you want her. Because you can want people in your life, but not act upon it and not base your decisions on it. But you might still have a desire to be with them. But when it gets to the point where your wanting overpowers your nurturing and supportiveness and love toward them, that's when it comes back to you and focusing on what you want for her. And there's the line. Do you want what she wants for herself, or do you want what you want for her? That's the tricky part, because I know you want what you want. I mean, we all want what we want. But when it comes to someone else, especially someone with your history, with your both of your history, because you were the emotionally abusive one, what needs to happen for your relationship to re-blossom, to start anew, is that she needs to be comfortable with you at every level. And one of the things that you said in your letter is, I want to show her who I am now. Well, here's the thing. You are showing her that right now. You are exposing her to the person you are now. She is seeing who you are by your behavior, by your reactions, by everything that she sees. You're showing her, from what she can tell, the person you are today. Which means if she still has a thought of getting together with you again, then she likes what she sees. But she doesn't trust what she sees yet. And because of that, it may take a lot of time. You know, you talked about my relationship with my wife. When I was married, I was emotionally abusive toward my wife. I was highly judgmental, and I wanted her to do the things that I wanted her to do. If she just did the things that I wanted her to do, we would have had a happy relationship. That was my thought process back then. So my perception is she never complied, so I was always triggered. I was always emotionally triggered. She didn't comply, which made us unhappy. I blamed it all on her. I never took responsibility till near the end. But what happened at the end? You know, about a year or two before our relationship ended, she started falling out of love with me. She was no longer in love. She still loved me. She wanted me to be happy, but she didn't want to be with me. She didn't want me in her life. She did not feel good being with me in a romantic relationship. So we separated. And when she told me she wasn't in love with me anymore, that was devastating. It was hard to accept. But it happened, and after that, she wanted to be friends, and I was still, I don't know, possessive. I was still hurt. I still wanted us to be together. So I would say things in anger that stated, why aren't we together? Why don't we just get together and work on this? Why don't we go to counseling? Why don't we do something that works towards our healing while we're together? Why do we have to be apart? And she didn't want to be together. So I had to accept that decision. So your question to me was, why weren't you and your wife able to get back together after you did the work you needed to do? Well, yes, I did the work. I was able to heal quite a bit from my emotionally abusive ways. I stopped concentrating on her and started concentrating on myself. I focused on me and what I needed to do to bring the best version of me into the relationship. And by doing that, I was changing and I was healing and I was learning so much about myself. And she saw this. She noticed it. And she didn't know who I was anymore. She was like, who are you? In a good way. She liked it. She really did. However, just like you asked, was it too late? For her, she had reached her threshold. Her threshold was, I was too unsafe to be around. At least in the sense where she is able to open her heart to me. And that might be where you two are, where your wife is afraid because of all these years. When she was vulnerable, you probably made it very unsafe for her to be vulnerable. Every time she opened up, every time she became vulnerable, you crushed the trust. You destroyed it. You did something or said something that made her feel unsafe around you. It's like if you put out your hand to shake someone else's hand. And most people would reach over and shake your hand. But what if you put out your hand to someone over and over again, and every time you did, they hit it with a ruler? This is conditioning 101. We condition our partners to be the person they turn into. I mean, we're not solely responsible for it, but our behavior, especially when they're most vulnerable, will shape who they are and how they behave as the relationship goes on. So if you don't like how your partner has changed, it's probably something that you're partially responsible for. You might have done something over the years that have changed them in a way that you don't like. Every time my wife opened up to me and was vulnerable with me and felt safe, I made it unsafe. So eventually what happens when you are vulnerable and you are made to feel unsafe in that moment, you're going to close the door more and more and more until you double lock it and weld it shut. That's what happened to my wife. She fell out of love. She closed the door, double locked it, never wanted to feel unsafe again, at least with me. Did not want to feel unsafe. I don't want to feel unsafe with you. She didn't say these words, but I could tell that was happening, and I can look back and see exactly that's what happened. I was vulnerable with you all these times, and then I felt crushed every time you stepped on that vulnerability, every time you made me feel like I was in a dangerous situation. And she became jaded by it. She just didn't want that in her life anymore, and she finally reached maximum threshold. And once she reached that point, there was no turning back. So the day she said she no longer was in love with me, that was it. The door was shut. we were completely out of the relationship. No matter how I felt about it, she shut that door. And she did it for her own protection. We all have these protection mechanisms, and I call them boundaries. They help us survive. We cannot possibly survive unless we take advantage of these protection mechanisms inside of us. There's going to be a point where someone hurts you so much where you finally snap and say, I'm not going to take it anymore. And after that point, I mean, that you could call that the breakthrough or the breakdown. Either way, there's no turning back. You typically can't get back after that. So back to you, Chase, where you get to a point in your relationship where she feels so emotionally abused that she finally closes the door, falls out of love, which I'm assuming probably happened, because when you're in love, you feel safe and you can be vulnerable and you want to be close to the person. But when you're not in love, it's not really like that anymore. It's completely, those components are gone. And when those components are gone, now you have a different type of relationship. My wife wanted to be friends with me, but I didn't. Now, at least I was able to end our communication by saying, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everything that I ever did in this relationship, and I do take responsibility. Hopefully someday we'll meet in the future as new people, and maybe we can have a civil conversation. But right now I'm healing. I need to heal, and I need to continue working on myself. And I want you to have a great life. And that was our almost final communication. She did reach out and say sorry that my cat died, which I thought was very sweet. But I don't really communicate with her anymore. But I do support her. I can look at her life. I can see her on social media enjoying a new relationship and go, wow, I'm so damn happy for her. I really want her to be happy because I put her through misery. I can say that. I'm not proud of what I did, but I really do want her to be happy. And if that involves her finding someone that makes her happy and it's not me, that to me is really loving someone. So I don't know if you're there. I don't know if you can see your wife in that way, because I have no way to predict that my current relationship's going to last for the rest of our lives. I have no way to predict that. I want it to. I want it to continue to grow and prosper. And we always get closer every day, every week, every month, every year. But who knows, you know? I really thought my relationship with my wife was going to last too. So I put all my time and energy and effort into this relationship. That's where my focus is, because she wants to be with me and I want to be with her. But if she decides to, you know, kick me out, leave one day, join a convent, become a nun, then I have a choice to make. And then if, you know, my wife breaks up with her relationship and she comes back to me, then I have another choice to make. And it's possible that we get together someday in the future. I don't see that happening, honestly, but let's just say that that was one possible scenario out of multiple alternate realities that could happen. I say that because that's the same for you. Your wife could get into a relationship and have a few years of whatever, happiness, bliss, misery, who knows. You could get into a relationship, have a few years of this, that, and the other. And then suddenly you've learned what it takes to be in a relationship. And then you get back together. And this is where I'm going with you, is that where your wife is now is probably in a place of a very tightly locked, closed door that she is just not ready to open for you. And she may not be ready for that until she experiences some more life, until she experiences what it's like to be in a relationship with other people. As much as that may hurt to hear, I'm not sure where you're at with that. But let's just say that she dates someone, maybe even gets married, and she's with them 5, 10, 15 years, and she realizes that isn't what she wants. And you have been friends with her all that time, and then you get together again with an entirely different background. And this is what I want you to remember, is that right now, your only background is each other and what that relationship brought into your lives. Some good, lots of bad, or at least toxic, And now all you have is this toxic history with lots of emotional triggers still there. I'm sure there are some emotional triggers still there. I'm sure that she could look over at you one day and see that look that you used to give her, or hear you say something that was very reminiscent of a time that made her feel awful. Those are probably still there. And her heart has a suit of armor on and protected from those looks, from that emotional abuse. And that armor is not going to come off until she has enough references to know that you're not that person anymore. And this is the most important part, she's not the person that will let that into her life anymore. Yes, you said she found her new identity and she's this great new person that you really admire and want back in your life. But part of that new identity is not letting the type of behavior that she was exposed to back into her life. And guess what? She associates that behavior with you, or at least being in a romantic relationship with you. So her only history of romantic relationships, from what I gather in your letter, is with someone who put her through a lot of misery. And she has to look at her life and go, do I want to let this person in and risk that again? Because she could get into another relationship and maybe experience the same thing, or maybe not. Maybe she experiences something healthier, but it doesn't work out. And then you're still working on yourself and supporting her and not wanting to control her, not wanting what you want for her, but wanting what she wants for her. It's a very evolved space to be in, believe me. I've been there, to actually want what the person you love wants for themselves. That is a challenge, because now you take yourself out of the picture. Now it's not about you. This is anti-narcissism. You look at someone else that you love and you go, wow, you want that for yourself? All right, I support that. I want you to be happy, so I will support that. And then you look inward and you go, wow, I want her in my life. Well, when those thoughts come, you can start to ask yourself questions like, why do I want her? Why does it have to be her? Well, because I'm attracted to her and we have such a history together and we have a lot of fun together, you know, when it's not toxic. And we have all this other stuff, these compatibilities, the sex is great or whatever. And then I ask the next question, which I've asked on other episodes, where if someone else came along that was just as attractive, just as fun, you had so many commonalities, even more, you had just as much compatibility in a lot of areas, and there was a chance that you could have even more fun, and you felt even more loved, would it matter what her name was? Does it have to be your ex-wife's name? Really, what it comes down to is, if you can feel better than you ever did, more loved, have more fun, have better sex, have better this, have better that, if you can feel all of this stuff, that's all the good stuff that you had with your ex-wife, and even more, would it matter if it was your ex-wife or not? Because if someone comes along and offers that in your life and you refuse it, and your ex-wife doesn't want you, or at least in this day and time, then it gets into the area of obsessive. I'm not saying you are. I'm saying that it can get to that point where you're obsessed and you have to have this person. And that obsession is almost stalkerish. And you're going to continue pursuing them even though they're not wanting you to pursue them, or they're not ready for that type of pursuit. It's almost like you're saying, I don't really care if you want me to pursue you or not. I'm going to do it anyway. That borders on stalkerish. That borders on obsessive. I'm not saying you are that. I'm saying that's what it leads to, is that when we have so much feeling towards someone and we want them in our life so bad that our behavior is defined by that near obsessive compulsion to want to be with them. And if you are feeling this, if you are feeling a little obsessed or maybe even a little possessive, then instead of focusing on trying to get back together with her, start to focus inward again and figure out why you are so obsessed with this one person. The challenge for you is that this is probably all you've known for real love in your life, or at least the first person that has ever come into your life that you've tried to make a life with, that you've married and wanted this to last. And then these discoveries about yourself and how the marriage isn't going to work out because of the toxicity in it. And then you share two kids together. So there's that whole dynamic there where you really wanted things to work out, but they didn't. I'm sure that has something to do with it as well. But what it really boils down to, and this is what I'm going to leave you with, is that because she was, I'm going to say, more or less the victim in this relationship, because you admit that you were emotionally abusive toward her, she has to get to that place by herself, self-realized, self-initiated, self-empowered, to a point where she feels trusting again to open the door a crack and let you in. But it has to be on her terms. If it's on any other term, that's when it's likely to fail. Because if you do a really good job of convincing her that you're this new guy and healed and everything is going to be great, then it's not self-initiated. Then if you get into a relationship after that point, she's going to find references that she made a mistake. She wasn't ready, because if she was, she would have told you, I'm ready, let's do this, because you had to convince her of that. If it's not self-initiated on her end, it's likely not going to last, which is why it's so important to step back and go, you know what? I trust your path. And if your path leads you to another relationship, then I trust that's what you need to do for you. And I honor that as well. I'm motioning with my hands right now, just showing her my hand, saying, I honor you. I'm pointing at her with my open hand, saying, I'm honoring you. I honor your path. If that's what you need to do, great. As long as you're happy. And you want to come from a genuine place. If you don't feel genuine saying that, then there's something that needs to be worked on in you. I'm not saying that your feelings are bad or wrong. It's healthy to want someone. It's healthy to be attracted to someone and to desire someone. But if they're not ready, they're not ready. And when you allow them to go at their pace, even if it takes 10 years, that is the greatest gift of love you can give to anyone. And I know it's hard. I've been there. I know it's hard. So to your last question, do you think it could be too late for my ex-wife, even though she verbalizes that she would like to try again in the future, but we need to heal first? I don't think it's a matter of being too late. In fact, I would treat your ex-wife as not your ex-wife and just as a person that you love and care for, who is also the mother to your children, and you just want her to be happy no matter what. So it's not a matter of it being too late or too soon or this or that. It's a matter of just being the healthiest person you can be, the healthiest father and the healthiest friend to her that you can be. And if something comes of that, then it can be treated as a new relationship, because what you had is still lingering, at least in her mind. There's still emotional triggers. There's still fears. And there's also the slight possibility where she may not be able to be in love with you again. Now, I don't really think that's absolutely true, because you said that she hopes that you find your way back to each other in the future. I think that leaves an open door. And I hope she doesn't say that because she fears that if she tells you something else, that you'll respond negatively, because that's important too. If your wife has learned to respond to you in a way that keeps opportunity or possibility open because she's afraid of how you'll respond if she tells you the truth, that'll be tough, because then you'll never get a straight answer out of her. I think it's important that you get a straight answer, but at the same time, it would be great if that was a straight answer. I couldn't tell you one way or the other. It could be either one. But it doesn't matter. You just treat her with kindness, respect, and support and love. And of course, when your kids see that, they'll know how to treat their significant others when they grow up as well, because they learn a lot from their parents. Anyway, I don't know if this is what you wanted to hear, but these are my insights and my opinions. And like Doc Brown said in Back to the Future, your future is unwritten. But I do know that as long as you're showing up authentically and she can witness the changes in you for herself, where you don't have to convince her of anything, you're just showing up, you're just being genuine, you're just being authentic, then self-realization will start to kick in. And then whatever decision she makes is self-empowered. And that's the most important part. Thank you so much, Chase. Thank you for writing in and sharing this story. And thanks for listening to this episode. We'll be right back with some thank yous and my final thoughts. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank Asha with getoutofthemess.com. I tell you what, if you don't know what you can use this service for, just give her a call. Ask her. 678-355-8777. For those of you in the US or Canada, tell Asha what's going on in your life and she'll tell you if it's the right thing for you or if you just want to plan ahead, which is always a good idea. And have you heard of the A to Z of self-empowerment? Yes, The Overwhelmed Brain book. I talk about it every week. Just go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, your favorite bookstore. It's all the key components that I talk about in this show, condensed into a single book that you can carry around on the plane, in the park, by the pool, or maybe even the bathroom. I won't get into that, though. It's The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers book at your favorite bookstores now. And I want to thank the patron members. The TOB patron program is a way to support the show and get a little back in return. There's private episodes, worksheets, and even email coaching. Those of you on the email coaching program, it's always good to connect with you directly. I love getting your messages and trying to help you through your challenges one-on-one. So if you want to check it out, go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And of course, there is a new worksheet coming out. Silver and up patron members will get it for free. But if you aren't on the patron program, you can also get it by going to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/mean. That's M-E-A-N. It is the manipulative and emotional abuse worksheet where you get a number that defines the category or class that you're in if you're in a manipulative relationship, because a lot of times you don't know just how far the manipulation goes and you feel like you're going crazy. You can't trust yourself. You feel guilty more times than not. You feel like there's something going on, but your friends and family can't tell what it is and you can't convince them what it is. Because it happens over a period of time. There's a lot of dots to connect, and this worksheet helps you connect those dots. So if you're interested in that, go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/mean. And again, thank you, patron members. Silver and Up will receive that worksheet for free. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And to close, I'm going to teach you something. Well, you probably already know what it is. But I'm going to teach it to you anyway. It's called future pacing. If you haven't heard that term, it's something I learned in hypnosis quite a few years ago, where after you do some work with the subconscious mind, there's something that the hypnotist will take you through, or the therapist or whoever, called future pacing. Future pacing helps you to imagine a time in the future when you get to test the response that you normally would have had against what will happen in the future. For example, somebody goes to a hypnotist and wants to quit smoking. And one of the times they smoke most is when they're with friends or when they're at lunch or at a bar or whatever. And so after the hypnotic work is done, the hypnotist will say, okay, now imagine a time in the future where you're at a bar and you have a drink and now you have an opportunity to light up a cigarette. What's going on? How do you feel about it? And this allows them to find out if what they just talked about in helping the person stop smoking, if it'll stick, because they're imagining what it'll be like in the future. And if the person says, well, you know, I feel like I'm reaching for my pocket, and then I think, wait a minute, I don't need to smoke. Then the hypnotist can say, great, is that a good feeling? And they might go, yeah, it's a great feeling. And then that kind of gives them an idea, hey, when this happens, because as soon as you leave the hypnotist's office, what's going to happen, right? And it gives them both reassurance that, hey, this might actually stick. Well, I like to do future pacing with almost anything. Like my girlfriend was going to buy a $500 program online. And, you know, she's been suckered before. So she sees this online program and she's afraid to buy anything online, or at least that has to do with training or an online system of any sort. So I asked her, and I did some future pacing. I was like, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to imagine what it's like. You just bought the program, and now you're a week into the program that you just bought. How does it feel? What do you think? She goes, it feels pretty good. I think I'm okay with that. I was like, great. And I was like, okay, now imagine what it's like going into the future having not bought the program. You let it go. You've just decided, you know, it's too risky, or whatever thoughts come to your mind. And she tried it on and she said, I'll feel like I'm missing out on something. I was like, well, there you go. That helps you make your decision, because that's what we were trying to do. She was trying to decide to buy this program or not. And when she tried it on and she had the program for a week, I mean, this is all in her mind, she felt good. So that really helped her decide. And she went ahead and bought the program, and she does feel good about it. She did all her research. It's just that she didn't trust that part of herself that got suckered before. It's not that she'll never get suckered again. It's just that, you know, we have all these thought processes that go on that if you've been betrayed or, you know, misled or deceived before, then even if you have all the data at your disposal, you still may not want to take that final step, that commitment. So I helped her get to that point. And I do that in my own life too. So I'll think, all right, I've created this product. I've created this ebook, or I'm deciding if I want to create this ebook or something. So how long is it going to take me? I'm thinking ahead in the future. Oh, it might take me 3 to 6 months. All right. After it gets out there and it's on Amazon and it's, you know, starting to sell, or maybe not, how do you feel about looking back at what you did, you know, in the future, looking back at what I did, and was it worth the effort? And the thought might come to me as like, well, I'm only selling it for $3. And it took me 6 months to get there. Yeah, but it could be, you know, 100 people buy it for $3. And then I go, well, Amazon keeps their cut and I'm only making $250 per sale. So that's $250 for 6 months work. Yeah, but it could be 10,000 people that buy it. And then I think, no, that's probably not going to happen. So I have all these negatives that come up and I go, it's just not worth me doing it. Now, it doesn't mean it's not worth me putting out the content and helping other people. Yes, there's that humanitarian side of me that does that. But then I think, well, I do that every week. I come up with a podcast episode every week. I come up with blog articles once every 2 or 3 weeks. I come up with all this other content. So writing this ebook just to put it on sale in hopes to make a few extra bucks isn't appealing to me. If I could sell it for $100 and people would buy it, it might be a different story. But, you know, I look at this, I future pace, and I imagine what it would be like to have it. And then I imagine what it would be like if I didn't do it. And suddenly I have this rush of all this free time. I think, wow, I don't have to work on the ebook today. And then the next day, I don't have to work on the ebook. I'm thinking ahead going, wow, all this free time that I can do other stuff. And so suddenly I have my answer. So I think that's a neat little exercise to do for yourself. If there's something that you're contemplating, if there's a decision that you want to make, future pace yourself. Go, what will my life be like if I make this decision? What will my life be like if I don't make this decision? What will my life be like if I say yes? What will it be like if I say no? What will it be like if I spend this money? So on and so forth. This segment is actually brought to you by someone who wrote in and commented on her relationship. She said that, you know, if I stay, I'm going to feel hurt. And if I leave, I'm going to feel hurt. I just don't know what to do. And this is especially great to use future pacing on, a relationship issue. Because there are people in relationships, maybe even you, that are in a relationship where it hurts to stay. But you don't want to feel rejected. You don't want to feel abandonment. So you stay just to get anything you can, even though it's toxic and maybe abusive, emotionally abusive, or dysfunctional in some way. So you know if you stay, you'll get hurt, but you'll get something else out of it. Is it enough? You know, this is the dilemma. But if you leave, it's going to hurt, because that's when the abandonment kicks in and the rejection kicks in and The insecurities kick in. Can I be without someone in my life? Can I be single? That hurts. So you have all these pains. So this is what I ask you to do, is to try it on. Future pace. Go into the future, maybe a year from now. If I'm still in the relationship, how do I feel a year from now? You know, you're going to come up with your own scenario there. If I choose to break up and I go through some grieving and some whatever I need to go through to get through it, what will I feel like a year from now? Where will I be? What will life be like? And you try that on. I won't put any answers in your head, but I think that's a neat exercise to do. Another question you can ask yourself is, if things never change in the next year, will I be okay with it? There's another aspect of future pacing. If nothing changes, will I be okay? Sometimes that can be yes, sometimes that might be no. But these are the important ways to figure out if you're making decisions that are right for you. So as you're future pacing, just keep an open mind. That will allow you to step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.